Everybody, welcome to the Jetstream Podcast. Jonas Schwartz, Willie Colon, ready to wrap up what was a very disappointing week for the Jets and get you ready for the Falcons game. A couple things to get to really quickly right off the top. Remember to listen to the Jetstream every week by subscribing to the show on the iPhone podcast app or wherever you listen to your podcast. Just search the Jetstream, find our logo, hit subscribe. Please make sure to rate and review the show. The more reviews we receive, the more visible the podcast is. Willie suggests thumbs up or
all day.
He's not the intimidating one. I come to your house then.
Right. We send Jonas.
He's the more intimidating one. Happy Jeremy Curley is going to be joining us in just a little bit to talk about what happened last Sunday and how this team moves on, and also his great renaissance as being part of the New York Jets, as he obviously left and then has come back. But let's get to it. 28-14, the Jets have the lead. They have this thing in their hands. And you're looking at the Jets going 4-3. Jay Cutler gets knocked out. The whole game changes. 17 unanswered for the Dolphins in the fourth quarter. This, Willie, I get it. The first 2 weeks, you didn't know what the Jets were yet. But now they've had this good run.
You're right.
This was the first one that really hurt.
Yeah, this one hurt because it was everything was lined up for them to win. You just didn't expect Matt Moore to come off the bench and drop daggers and this team to kind of build momentum to finish the game. It was tough because you have to talk about the penalties. You have to talk about the lack of execution and play calling in the second half. And his defense has yet to come up with a big play that's significant enough to close out games. So it's a lot to talk about. We can easily point the finger at Buster Screen, right? It's easy to say, well, he was a problem. He had, I think, 7 or 8 penalties. But it's not. You know, they didn't do enough to really close the game. Yeah, penalties was a factor. They didn't get after Matt Moore enough. On the offensive side, they didn't stay in long drives. They were 4-for-11 on third down. You can't win ball games like that. And so it's frustrating in that part. And I know everybody wants to blame McCown's pick, but I blame the OC John Morton, because at the end of the day, you cannot put that quarterback in decision. He's going to try to win the game. I understand you play to win, and I'm totally for that. But you got to understand they're going to take away the sidelines because they know you want to stop the clock. It was me and Coach talked about it in the post game. It made no sense to me that if you know they're going to cover the outside, run the draws, run the ball, stretch it out. And nothing of that. It was just a bonehead pick, and it just crushed us.
Yeah, again, that pick in the last minute
took
of the game
air out of me.
Killed everything. It's interesting you say that. And obviously I heard you and Mike Westhoff talk about that, and, you know, maybe a little dump off in the middle of the field or screen pass. And I agree those would have been better play calls. And you guys know far better than me. But I do wonder, I don't like the play call either. But the guy's been in the league for 15 years. Shouldn't he know better than trying that? Or shouldn't you at least be able to trust him that he's not going to make a throw like that?
You should trust him. But if you go down to that play, I mean, he's only a foot away from his own goal line. If they get a 2-point conversion, or not 2-point, if they get a safety on that play, game's over.
Right.
James Carpenter gets pressure sitting on his lap. He thinks he has enough arm strength to get it over James Carpenter and deliver the ball. He didn't see the guy. I forgot who intercepted the pass. He didn't see him that really got in the way of the receiver. So all that, do you expect him to have enough awareness to say, hey, I can't make this throw, let me just take the sack or fall forward? Yeah, but, you know, he's a competitor. He's trying to win the game. He's trying to get this team out of a possible loss, and they end up losing. So it was a bad play all the way around.
You bring up the play calling, and I thought John Morton's generally done a good job.
He's done
this
a great
year,
job. But he's struggling coming out the second half.
Fourth quarters have been a real problem
for this team.
And you know what else? They didn't really stay with the run. Now, I know a lot of them do with penalties, and there are a lot of false starts. I mean, you say Buster Screen, and that's right. I mean, 12 penalties, 124 yards, a lot of penalties to go around.
Yes.
But they had a lot of false starts, so they were starting in first and 15s. The running backs had good days. Bilal Powell, Matt Forte averaged 4 or 5 yards a carry, but they didn't run the ball that much.
They didn't run the ball well enough, and you could tell as the game got longer and it kind of really got into the heated situations, they look fatigued, especially the defense, because the defense was on the field a lot. The offense really wasn't pulling their weight on their side of the ball. And I didn't want to believe it, but I knew things were in trouble because I saw McCown scrambling a lot. And he's not a scramble quarterback.
Right.
He's a guy that sits on the quarterback and delivers the ball. He kept trying to have to buy time and try to get down the field, and that's just not his strength. So I was like, well, you know, maybe that's just me being pessimistic. But, you know, we're going back-to-back weeks where they're coming out in the second half and they just fall flat. And that's something that's on the OC, that's on the, on that offensive line, that when things go flat, they're going to have to pick their games up. They're going to have to really establish a run game and really impose their will in the trenches. They failed to do that back-to-back weeks.
What'd you make of what happened with the defense? And you bring up Buster Skrine, and it's not just on Buster Skrine, but he did have a rough day.
Rough
he
one.
Would tell you he had a rough day.
Yeah.
What'd you make of what happened with the defense and the secondary specifically? And here's the other thing. I ask you this because you point this out to me all the time. If, you know, teams are all watching these games.
Yeah.
You don't think the Falcons are going to try and find a way to target Buster Skrine this week?
They're going to go right at him, and they're going to try to isolate him.
You know him. How does he bounce back from this?
Well, I mean, you pray that he one, understands the mistakes he made. He understands that, you know, when you're out there on the island by yourself, and you know, you're going to have to play with better technique in your feet. And at times when you watch Buster in coverage, or if he's in a bump and run situation, His feet go dead on him. He gets caught grabbing and holding, and that's what the refs call. But overall, this team, you know, on the defensive side, one thing that was a big, Darren Lee had a really good game. I thought he played better.
Yeah.
Big Mo Wilkerson, I don't know if it was his birthday or what happened, but he showed up. And it just wasn't the fact that he didn't get sacks. He had pressure on the quarterback. When he had the one-on-ones, he was winning them.
Ran down Jay Ajayi on the backside.
So yeah. We're starting to say, it was
good. We hadn't seen that since, you know,
and we have
years.
It. Yeah. And we have it. And I don't know what it was, but Mo has to understand, that's the Mo Wilkerson they need.
That's the one they're paying.
That's the, yes.
That's the $17 million
that's
one.
That's the seven. We need that guy. So hopefully he goes back, looks at that tape and say, hey, that's what they're looking for. They're looking for you to win on the one-on-ones, be disruptive. You had an interception that you brought home. I mean, there's a lot. He can take away from that game. The problem with Mo Wilkerson right now is he can't go against Atlanta and we can't find him again on tape.
Right.
That cannot happen. So if he wants the critics to stay off his back and he wants to remain a Jet, he's going to have to take Miami Mo Wilkerson and double him up and come against Atlanta for them to have a shot against that D-line, that offensive line.
Jeremy Curley will talk to in just a few minutes here on the Jetstream podcast, but I want to stick with Mo Wilkerson here for a second. You bring up a good point. After the game, players were heard to be yelling in the locker room. And it turned out it was Mo Wilkerson. All positives, exhorting his team to do better, and this is not who we want to be, and we have to do better. But I got to ask you, and you know the inner workings of locker rooms, for a guy like Mo, and this was his first game where he really showed up, I hate to put it this way, but how is that received in that locker room? He's trying to do the right thing, but is that the right voice at that moment?
You know, obviously I haven't been in there, but I know every post game when we see a guy that's breaking down the team, after a tough win and loss, it's usually DeMario Davis. It has not been Mo Wilkerson.
Right.
So, which leads me to believe, are you one of those guys when things are going well for you, you want to be the leader? Or are you one of those guys that after every game is saying, is spilling his feelings and telling the team what they should be doing? Because I've watched DeMario Davis. I've watched Josh McCown. All those guys are passionate guys, and they break down the team. We haven't seen Mo. So, this is the first time we even heard of Mo doing this.
Yeah.
So, as a player, if I was in that locker room, fine. Mo has earned that right to do so. He's still considered one of the leaders on defense. But, once again, we saw Miami Mo. We need Atlanta Mo. And we need Atlanta Mo to be just as efficient and hardworking and disruptive and not only getting the interceptions, if possible, but sacks. He has to be a big-time weapon for this defense, and it has to start now.
No, there's no question about that. Something else from Jets postgame live on Sunday that was really interesting to me. You said this game would stick with you. That kind of loss would stick with you for a couple of days. And I know you have – some people have 24-hour rule. Willie Colon's so passionate. It's 48-hour rule.
It's 48 hours,
he needs a little extra 24 to get over it. Will it be hard for this team in your mind to let go of what happened Sunday? Because I, as a Jets fan – and you know this is where I'm
we all went home.
And
we,
my demons.
Yeah, we
you
all
know
went
my
home.
Demons is a Jet fan.
Yeah.
I have seen plenty of times where a loss like that becomes 2 and 3 losses.
Yeah.
How do they leave this behind them? How tough is it?
It is tough because you think about where the Jets are. So right now they're 3-4, but before Miami they were 3-3. You know, if they go 4-3 and beat Miami, this is the type of win that kind of propels you to get other wins. Now, on the flip side, now they're on a realistic side, they're 3-4. When they and I'm not saying the Jets are going to make the playoffs. I'm just saying if there's a shot and there's a hope, this is the game that comes back and kicks you in the butt. So this is why you sit back and like, man, if we would have just beat Miami, because you don't know how Buffalo's going to finish. You don't know how New England's going to finish. I mean, obviously they're the juggernaut of the East,
and they seem to straighten themselves out against Atlanta.
They seem to come back when they need getting back on course when they need to, but they could be in a hunt somewhere. You know what I mean? And this is come November, late November, December, we may look at a Jets team that may have a shot, but now a game like this, you're like that kind of takes you out of it. So you have to start. You know, this would nag me as an old-timer, like, man, you know, these are games, you know who you should lose to or who could beat you. But they should have beat this Miami Dolphins team. They shouldn't have lost this game.
I always worry as someone who's watched this team for his whole life, I've just seen so many scenarios where they blow a lead, and then it's a couple more weeks till we see a win. Now, this group has been resilient.
A good point. It's a very good point.
You know,
I'm not against you, and it's going to be important. This is why I rely back on Mo. Even right. Josh McCown.
Yeah.
Because you've been exposed at this point. A lot of teams are saying, hey, we know they're going to give us their best shot coming out the first quarter. But coming third, fourth quarter, this is where we rally and we win the game. That's what's happened back-to-back weeks.
Yeah.
So if you don't think the Falcons are just sitting back, all right, they're going to jump up 14, all right, that's fine, we got them.
We'll come back.
We'll come out of halftime, we'll blow them out the water. Why? Because they have the firepower to do so, and they have a defense that can get after a quarterback. So the Jets are really going to have to come out at halftime and say, hey, this is where we lose. How are we going to correct it? Penalties, finish, be efficient on third down, and on third down, establish our identity in the trenches. They can finish our games like that. But if they go back to what happened last week, you're right. It may start stacking up.
All right. We're now happy to welcome to the Jetstream podcast Jeremy Curley, originally drafted by the Jets, fifth round out of TCU. Left the team, comes back, been a big-time contributor this year. Jeremy, thanks for coming on the Jetstream podcast. We appreciate it.
Man, thanks for having me.
JK, we're going to jump right into it. Tough loss Sunday down in Miami. I know you guys are frustrated. Talk about the temperature in the locker room and how you guys can move forward.
Like I said, I think the temperature in the locker room is just kind of heated right now, only that, you know, we feel like we should have won that game going up, you know, 28-14 going into the fourth quarter. Yeah, I feel like, you know, we felt like, you know, we definitely should have came away with a win. But like you said, we got to work on that killer instinct, something that Todd talked about. And it's only something that you can, you know, keep practicing at. And 28-14, there's no reason why we shouldn't have left Miami with a win.
You talk about practicing killer instinct. You mentioned Todd Bowles said it after the game. And there's been so many positives for this Jets team this year, but fourth quarters have been a problem. How does a team develop killer instinct? How do you start to finish games better?
You just got to keep practicing that, man. You know, at the end of the day, like, when you got a team down like that and, you know, a team like Miami who just came back on Atlanta down 17, you got to know your opponent and you got to know exactly how to beat your opponent. And being up 28-14, you know, I kind of feel like we let off the gas a little bit and let them slip back in that game. So I think it's a learning point for us. We just got to keep on that gas, man. Keep attacking people. Keep going downfield. You know, keep that competitive edge or whatever it is. And we definitely, you know, need to work on that.
You have had an immediate impact coming from San Francisco. Now you're with the Jets. I thought you've had a great year thus far. Talk about your mindset going into every game and how you plan to lift this team going forward.
I mean, my mindset going into every game is, you know, I got to kill the instinct myself. So every time I go into a game, man, it's not to, you know, just beat my opponent. You know, it's to let my opponent, you know, remember that, you know, I was here and I'm gonna be one of the toughest, you know, competitors that you run against. So every time I step into the game, man, that's my mindset, that's my edge, that's what I carry, that's the chip on my shoulder. So, and I feel like it's been a credit to my game and to, you know, my story thus far.
Listen, no doubt you guys have all played, I think, with a chip on your shoulder this year, since the expectations, I know you came late to this, but the expectations were so low coming in. You guys have played with a great chip on your shoulder. But you've also been chippy in general with all the penalties. I got to ask you, what 12 penalties, 124 yards on Sunday. Why do you think this team is racking up this amount of penalties, and how do you clean it up?
I think, you know, well, penalties is something that comes with the game. But as many penalties as we had, it's just got to come down to, you know, better self-discipline. Yeah, at the end of the day, you know, you're going to have penalties. Rarely people play a perfect game, but you know, some of these penalties here and there kind of, you know, kind of sketchy. The one they called on Darren Lee, you know, the unsportsmanlike conduct or the late hit or whatever it was, you know, that was kind of, you know, kind of shaky.
Right.
But you know, definitely, like, you know, the false start and maybe the holding calls and, you know, some of the defensive calls we can get better at, you know, but it's just self-discipline. I think that's one way we can, you know, get rid of some of those things.
You talk about, you know, self-discipline. One of the guys who I've thought who stepped up and been a real impact for this team, not only on off the field, on the field with his discipline, is Josh McCown. Talk about him and how much of a leader he has been for you guys.
Yeah, man, he's doing a good job, man. He's coming in, he's doing the work, and, you know, he's leading by example, and that's one thing you want, your quarterback.
What was your reaction when you did? Were you all about going for it? Fourth quarter, you guys get the ball, 40-some seconds left. Were you all about going for it to trying to get in the field goal range? Obviously, we know it didn't work out with the interception, but were you all about, hey, let's attack here?
Yeah, like I said, man, I have that killer instinct. It's no let off, you know, with me. With 47 seconds left, I feel like we have, you know, we have a good enough offense to drive down and get in the field goal range. We needed something like the 37-yard line. And, you know, just based off of, you know, how we drove down so easily the first drive of the game, you know, I feel like that was something that we could have done. But, you know, it is what it is. You know, like I said, 28-14, we should have won that game, you know, long before it got to that point.
You got the Atlanta Falcons coming up. It's going to be a tough game. Talk about some of the matchups that the Atlanta Falcons opposed to you guys.
I mean, yeah, they got an explosive offense. We know who they have. You know, they have Julio Jones. They have Deontay Freeman. They have a quarterback who's, you know, elite. So we know exactly what we're facing. They got one of the, you know, fastest defenses in the league right now. But they're just the next opponent on the, you know, on the roster. So we don't shy away from anybody. You know, they're coming in our house, and they're going to have to take the game away. You know, so, but you know, we're going into it knowing that, you know, we have to prepare the right way. We have to make sure that we're on top of our game. And, you know, it should be fun. It should be a fun one to watch.
Will it be hard? I always ask Willie these questions, and I was always curious about the player mindset. Sunday was a tough loss. Is it hard to move on from that, or easy just to put that behind you and get ready for Atlanta?
I think the first 24 hours is always hard, but, you know, after that 24 hours, it's if you hang on that one, you know, you'll be sure to get the next one, the next loss the next week. So you have to put that to bed. You know, it's been put to bed. You know, guys are already on film for Atlanta right now. You know, that's the main focus point. And, you know, if you sleep on the team like Atlanta worrying about what happened in Miami, you know, same thing's going to happen again.
Well, one more question before we move on here. I just got to know, you'll think this is a rigged question, Willie Colon. Who's winning a race, 50-yard dash, you or Willie Colon? I know you played with Willie. I want to hear some Willie stories. Do you just run away from him? Do you knock him and run away from him? How do you handle Willie in these situations?
I love Willie. That's my dude. That's my dog. But a 50-yard race with me and Willie.
Oh, you got that one.
I won that before we even started.
Now, wait, can you outlift Curly in the weight room?
I could put J.K. on the bar and lift them together.
I don't doubt that.
You know what was impressive when I played with J.K.? I mean, he's always had a calm demeanor, but the man has fire in his eyes. Like, when he steps on that field and them cleats is on and that helmet is on his head, he's calm. But the swag, the fire in the eyes, he morphs into somebody else. And I've always appreciated him because some guys, and JK can attest to this, there's a lot of guys who sit in that locker room and talk a really, really good one. And then when them lights come on, you can't find them. You're looking for the guy who's talking all that mess. And I never saw that out of JK, and I've always appreciated it. We've been through some tough losses and some good games, and he was one of those guys, and Britt could tell you, and Nick and all those guys I played with, when he was on the field, you knew he was going to produce just by that look in his eye, and I always appreciated it. So he was one of the gems, yeah, for sure.
Is it satisfying for you to be back? You left under circumstances. They just stopped using you for no reason. Then you were gone. Now you're back producing. Is it satisfying for you to be back producing with this franchise that drafted you?
Yeah, it is, man. And it's because, like you said, I never want to leave. You know, it's one of those things where it just was out of my hands. You know, I don't want to keep down talking or, you know, the person who was here, the offensive coordinator at the time. But, you know, I don't feel like it was a reason why I should have left. But, you know, everything happens for a reason. I'm just glad that path led me back here, you know, to be in a place where I'm most comfortable at and, you know, where I got a lot of love at.
I agree, definitely. Well, JK, we have a small segment, a part of this beautiful podcast we call Five First. So we're going to ask you some questions, some hard hitters. Hopefully you can take them. You ready?
Let's get it.
Where was your first kiss?
Where and who?
Oh, who was your first kiss, rather?
Y'all lucky my wife right here, so I can say it.
Well, we had Beecham on. He said it in front of his wife, so you got to man up.
I ain't going to bite my tongue. My first kiss, I was in kindergarten underneath the table. I think it was during nap time. I was supposed to be asleep, but I had one eye open.
Look at that. Supposed to be asleep and was getting worked on.
In kindergarten.
Boy, oh, boy. Yeah. Teachers must have been keeping an eye on you after that.
Right.
You remember your first high school touchdown?
Yeah.
Or interception.
Interception, too?
Not the first interception, but the first touchdown. I started varsity quarterback my freshman year, so it was a lot of talk that, you know, I wasn't going to be that guy. I was going to, you know, let down the team. So I remember my first touchdown, man. It was big to me.
Give me the play. Give me what happened.
It was a quarterback draw. We were playing Friday night. It was the first game of the season, and it opened up, and I think I took it like 30 yards straight down the middle.
Ooh.
And it kind of silenced everybody, you know, so it was special. I remember it like it was yesterday. Man.
Did you celebrate in the end zone?
Did you hit it with that JK swag?
Nah, I didn't hit it with swag yet. Nah, I was still trying to find myself.
He was developing the swag.
JK, what was your first car?
My first car, man, this is a credit to my wife. My first actual car was a 98 Grand Marquis, and my wife bought it for me. I think it was my sophomore year in college or junior year in college.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, she bought me my first car. Yeah. So
that's special.
It was a 98 Grand Marquis. Yep.
Yeah, that's awesome.
That is special. That's special. I'm still waiting for my wife to buy me something to the level of a car. I'm going to be waiting a long time. That's pretty good.
Wow.
What was your first job other than football?
My first job other than football, I was a assistant at the YMCA in Round Rock, Texas. And it was something that, you know, my sister had worked there, so it was easy to get on. It was something I love, man, working with the kids and being able just to help everybody. So, and that's actually something that, you know, I still give back to this day. I give back to the YMCA and Round Rock. So, you know, it's something that, you know, I'm glad I got to be a part of.
Can I just point out what a heartfelt, nice answer?
I know.
We got, like, from McClendon. McClendon gave us, he was in a Mexican restaurant.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that was
walking,
heartfelt right
walking
there.
Chips.
He's yeah,
helped, that's JK's
exactly
helping
right.
the kids.
That's it.
They did it right. They did the real thing. I went and took the easy route.
What was your first concert?
My first concert?
Yep.
Was a Jay-Z concert, man.
Really?
My first concert was a Jay-Z. Yeah, I'm kind of ashamed to say because I was
what?
Like, man, like, it took me all the way to get to New York to get to a Jay-Z concert. Geno Smith took me to my first concert. And it was like 3 years ago. We went to the Jay-Z concert when it was here at MetLife. And, man, I enjoyed myself, man. It was crazy. It was fun. I took my wife, my friends, my brothers. So, man, I had a great time.
You see, I've been waiting. See, we've been doing this for a number of weeks
right.
now. It's been. I'm shocked it took us this long to get to Jay-Z.
That is true. That is true. We haven't heard Jay-Z.
We've been getting
it.
A lot of Drake. We get Drake from everybody.
We got Drake and somebody else. Yeah.
Nah, not a Drake. I'm a Drake fan, but not a Drake concert fan. I need to be turned up a little bit.
I got you.
Drake can take me though.
See, look at that there.
You see that?
I like that.
Well, you think we're ever going to get somebody with my first concert, which was Def Leppard back in 1988? It's never happening. Not on this podcast. Jeremy, thanks so much, buddy. We appreciate it. It's great to have you back as a Jet. You're doing a great job producing this year. You've been great on special teams, too. Settled down the whole punt returning situation. We wish you good fortune the rest of the way, and we'll speak to you down the line.
I appreciate it, man.
Great fine, job, man. JK, man. You're awesome.
All right, man.
All right, our thanks to Jeremy Curley. Good stuff from him. The YMCA, look at that. I'm telling you, everybody else.
Jeremy loved the kids.
He does love the kids. That's exactly right. Let's get to Atlanta coming up this week. Very tough game for the Jets. Tough spot. Atlanta's annoyed and angry after getting crushed in New England. They have a lot of weapons, even though they're still trying to figure out a way to put it all together. Matt Ryan, a quarterback. Jets secondary that we've now seen exploited by Matt Moore
right.
for a stretch. So you would assume they're going to target that secondary in a similar ways, which was Buster Screen this past week. We'll see if they do it again. This strikes me as a tough matchup. What's your take?
Yeah, I mean, you got to honest. It's going to be a tough day for Mo Claiborne. I mean, he's going to be going against Julio Jones, probably the top five receiver in the league. This defense.
Now, he can't be covered by himself, right?
No, I mean, obviously, going to have double covers, but they have other weapons. Their tight end is a big weapon, Hooper. I mean, there's going to be, I'm talking about Devontae Freeman is another big weapon. He can not only run the ball.
Yeah, their running game's good.
He can catch the ball out the backfield. So this offense for the Atlanta Falcons has speed. And which is interesting because we went into the season talking about how the Jets defense showed a lot of speed and how that was their identity. So we're going to have to see this Jets defense really keep up with this Atlanta Falcons team who went to Foxborough and got their butts handed to them. They're going to be coming to New York. They're going to be looking at a team that say, hey, we know they're going to come out hot, but can they win it? Can they win in the fourth quarter? Atlanta knows how to win in the fourth quarter because they've been in big situations. The Jets do have youth against them. So it's going to be a lot. It's going to be a lot of dynamic going into this game. But I want to challenge this offensive line to really get this running game going, because that's going to help out Josh McCown. It's going to really help out, you know, Austin Seferian Jenkins is no longer a secret. Jermaine Kearse is no longer a secret. They know about J.K. He was, you know, Miami was able to neutralize him on Sunday. So can this offensive line say, hey, you know what? We're going to have to step our game up, and we really have to be dominant in the running game. They're going to have to move their muscle around. So it's going to be big for Carp and Winters and those guys to really kind of really push their weight around and get it done, because that's the key to Sunday's game for me. It's the run game.
We've also seen instances the last couple of weeks where the opposing coaching staff seems to make an adjustment to the Jets' offense, and then the Jets' offense doesn't quite run as smoothly for stretches of the game, and the Jets got to sort of adjust back. And I'm, you know, listen, Dan Quinn on that, you know, that defense is going to do the same thing.
Dan Quinn knows who the New York Jets are. He's familiar with this coaching staff. It's going to be important on another side for Josh McCown not to force things. Because sometimes when you see during games, when things aren't going his way, or he's looking to make a big play, he seems to force the ball, or it's always that one, you know, key pick, or something that
takes
goes.
Takes a sack
that's unnecessary, instead of throwing away things like that. He's going to have to rely on the run game and from aspect, say, hey, if we're in 3rd and 6 and 3rd and 5, let's go screen. We got Matt Forte, who has great hands out the backfield.
And Bilal Powell.
We have Bilal Powell. You know, we got Austin Seferian James. Yeah. So let's start using other weapons and getting schemes in plays where we're not having Josh McCown run out the pocket to try to make plays or just taking unnecessary sacks. The man's 37, 38 years old. This only week 8. We got a whole lot of football to play. They're going to need him to have a fighting chance. So they're going to have to protect him by running different things and getting the ball into different playmakers' hands, because they have the weapons. It's about getting it done.
You know, you earlier mentioned how good Darren Lee was against the Dolphins.
Yeah. Right?
Maybe one of his best
games
as a pro.
9 tackles, 1 forced fumble.
I mean, really, and he was all over the place.
Yes, he was.
Darren Lee, Jamal Adams, Marcus May have got to play a huge role in this game.
They will.
Calming, like you say, Devontae Freeman, and all the receiving options they have, they've got to play a huge role in this game.
Yeah, and what you want from Darren Lee at this point right now, because I think he has picked up his game, and I know we've both been critical of him. You want more out of him. You expect more out of him because he's not a rookie no more. But he's going to have to come to the point where, you know, they ask him to cover a lot more. Notice they don't put DeMario Davis to put cover a lot. They ask him Darren Lee to cover a lot more. But he's going to have to start getting some balls. He's going to have to start getting some interceptions on his own. Because there's times where he's in the position, but he does whatever or something happens. But he's going to have to become a playmaker, just like Marcus May got an interception, just like Jamal Adams had that one batted ball that Mo was able to bring down.
Right, right, right.
Darren Lee's going to have to contribute in that regard, because that really gives that defense and that linebacker core a lift. So he's going to have to start figuring out, listen, if I got a chance for interception, I'm just going to go get it.
Yeah.
Be fearless in that regard. He can do it. He has the speed to go get it.
Have you, in your past, have you had experiences where, you know, you talk about letting go of the last week.
Yeah.
Is there any chance, first quarter of this week, they're still caught on Miami, or is it really gone?
I think, I don't know, Jonas. I would like to think it's gone. I pray that it's gone, because Atlanta can rack it up fast.
Right. You could be 21-0.
It could be 21-0 5 minutes into the first quarter, so it could be bad. However, I expect the way Todd Bowles has handled this team and how guys have responded to him, that this will be over. You know, they're going to put this behind. They're going to focus on Atlanta Wednesday.
They did a good job getting over the New England situation.
Because I think partially they felt like they didn't really lose that game.
Right.
Deep down inside, it was like, man, there was a call that kind of took this away from them. They lost this one.
Yeah.
And they all have to look themselves in the mirror and all have to say, hey, if I would have did this better, or this would have worked out, or if I could have communicated better. So each guy in that locker room could stand back and say, hey, I contributed to this loss. I don't think they felt that way about New England. They felt like, listen, we stuck in there. We didn't get it done because we was robbed of a call. We had a shot at the end. We blew it. All right, we move on. This Miami loss, they're like, we all had a hand in this one.
Right.
So this is why I think it's going to be harder to let go.
Now, at this point, you're 3-4. You had a nice year. How important is this game towards the trajectory of your season? Big difference between 4-4 and 3-5, because 3-5, you're 2 games under .500.
Yeah.
Haven't been that way since week 3.
Yep.
And then you got a Thursday night in Buffalo.
Which is going to be a tough one.
Yeah.
But Buffalo
I'm sorry, you're right. Thursday night here against Buffalo. And then they go to Tampa, which is not an easy game either. It sort of feels like if the Jets are going to keep this going, like this is the week we find out
what
the Jets seem a little bit of a nice story, and now the record's going to be what we, you know, more what we thought?
Yeah.
Or is this going to be a team that really gives us a bit of a surprising run?
That's a great question. I think a lot, to your point, I mean, the bottom line is how do they respond? You know, or is this the mature team that is the cohesive locker room that we know them to be? Or this is going to be the team that kind of soaks? And are we going to kind of, you know, what happened in this game is, you see all the naysayers say, see, wait, they're going to crumble, they're going to disappear, there's going to be, you know, the toxic locker room. That's what they want to see. I want to see these guys respond and say, hey, we blew it. Let's respond better by getting this W. Let's be fast. Let's be physical. Let's take it to Atlanta. Let's not wait and kind of wait. You know, let's start off hot and then wait for the great demise. No, let's counteract that by just finishing games. You know, let them come out in the second half and really be the bullies I know they can be. That's what I expect.
Before we get to predictions, one last question for you about this matchup. To me, from the outside looking in, it seems like you should have two teams playing with some desperation.
Oh, 100%.
Atlanta blew 100%. A lead to Miami just the way the Jets blew a lead to Miami. Atlanta had a worse loss to New England than the Jets had. But each team has now lost to, you know, a couple games in a row. And Atlanta's sitting there going, wait a second. Our plan was to run through and get back to the Super Bowl, and now we're running into roadblocks. So they should be desperate. Jets should be desperate to get back on the right track when it looked like they had a chance at being towards the top of the division two weeks ago. Does desperation play into this, or is that just a media thing?
I think both teams are extremely desperate. I mean, you talk about Atlanta. They're playing in a division where the Saints are leading right now. You talk about Carolina is in the hunt. Tampa right now, they're 2-4, but they're still a good team.
Sure.
Atlanta is trying to figure out, like, hey, we got a lot of catch-up to do. We can't lose to this team because we know come December, the end of November, December, everybody's going to be making that run for the end of the finish line. The Jets have to get this game from a morale standpoint to keep that locker room together. For them to understand that, listen, losing is not okay. And losing doesn't mean because the world thinks you should lose, that don't mean you have to lose. You have to go out there and fight every Sunday. You have to finish. And that's going to be the theme of this week for the Jets. Finish. And I know Todd Bowles, what he's going to do, he's going to point out instances that where he expects this team to finish, how they can do better in certain situations. And he's going to put this team, and he's going to practice it all week. He's going to put them in third down situations. He's going to put them in red zone situations. And he's going to have live refs on those fields really critiquing these guys because your habits show up on Sunday.
Right.
So if you don't practice good habits and they show up, then they don't show up on Sunday. If you have bad habits during the week, then they show up on Sunday. So I think he's going to tell this team, like, listen, we're fine, but we have a lot of bad habits that keep creeping up. How can we fix them? So he's going to expose them this week.
All right. Give me your prediction.
You know, it's tough because Atlanta can score a lot of points.
I know it. I don't like this matchup. I hate to say it.
Yeah, I'll be honest. I'm not against you. But I'm never going to go against my Jets. I'm going to go 26-21.
26. I'm going to go 28-17 Atlanta.
Okay.
Two reasons. I'm going back to my reverse psychology. I picked the Jets against the Dolphins last week. I was bragging to you in the third quarter.
Yeah.
See that? No more reverse psychology. That blew up in my face. We're going back to reverse psychology, number one. Number two, I don't love this matchup.
It's a hard one.
We have barely talked about Matt Ryan. Matt Ryan is fantastic.
Because we know who he is.
He's
know what he's capable of. Yes, he's
And I like Josh McCown, and he's gutty and everything else. He's not Matt Ryan.
Yes.
Who is? Very few. And they're so good. And if Matt Moore can pick on Buster Screen, and I want to believe Buster Screen bounces back, but I can't be sure. But if Matt Moore can do it with, albeit, you know, listen, Kenny Stills and Jarvis Landry's a good receiver. But Atlanta's got good receivers.
Yeah.
They got a high-flying offense.
This defensive line has to come alive for that secondary to have a chance.
And
if Matt Ryan can sit back there and have all day.
Right. And by the way, Atlanta's got speed rushers on defense.
Vic Beasley.
Yeah.
They got a lot of key guys.
Right.
They got some guys that can go good.
I don't love this matchup for the Jets.
It's a big day for the guys in the trenches.
Yeah.
Huge day.
Prove me wrong, Jets. That's all I'm going to say. Once again, our thanks to Jeremy Curley. And remember to listen to the Jet Stream every week by subscribing to the show on the iPhone podcast app or wherever you listen to your podcast. Just search the Jet Stream. Find our logo, hit subscribe. Please make sure to rate and review the show. The more reviews we receive, the more visible the podcast is. Let's see how the Jets do. For Willie, I'm Jonas.
Are we going to go thirsty? Are you thirsty for something?
We didn't do thirsty.
We didn't thirsty. What are you thirsty for, Jonas?
You know what? You should be a host. It's fantastic. What am I thirsty for? I'm thirsty for the Jets to prove me wrong. I am thirsty for Josh McCown to bounce back, and I'm thirsty for Buster Skrine to bounce back.
I'm thirsty for Muhammad Wilkerson. We need another big day. Big Cat, I think you've been playing your tail off with your effort. But, Mo, we need you to step it up and continue to be tenacious. If you can do that, you give the Jets a winning shot.
You know what else I'm thirsty for? Leonard Williams to get a sack.
Yes. Amen.
We haven't talked about that because Mo was sucked out more of the time. But
they still don't have a sack. The interior linemen don't have a sack. Big Cat almost had one, but it slipped away from him.
There it is. Willie Colon reminding me of how to keep order here. Thanks so much. Again, our thanks to Jeremy Curley. We'll see how the Jets do this week. For Willie, I'm Jonas. Enjoy the games, everybody.
Jet up.